Okay, now going into some of the Old Testament prophets to just demonstrate how God is going to deal with Israel to bring her back. Let's just look at Jeremiah since we're there. Turn back with me to chapter 23. And we'll just read verses 3 through 8. Then I myself shall gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I have driven them, and shall bring them back to their pasture, and they will be fruitful and multiply. I shall also raise up shepherds over them, and they will tend them, and they will not be afraid any longer, nor be terrified, nor will any be missing, declares the Lord. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I shall raise up for David a righteous branch, and he will reign as king and act wisely and do justice and righteousness in the land. That's Jesus. And in his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will dwell securely. And this is his name by which he will be called, the Lord our righteousness. Therefore, behold, the Lord, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when they will no longer say, as the Lord lives, who brought the sons of Israel up from the land of Egypt. But as the Lord lives, who brought up and led back the descendants of the household of Israel from the north land and from all the countries where I had driven them, then they will live on their own soil. So we have a picture there of the righteous branch, Jesus being king on the throne of David, and all of them coming back into the land to dwell securely upon it. Right, you have a little bit more in Jeremiah, and I would suggest to you sometime at home to read chapter 30, but I'm not going to read that. Let's go over to Zechariah now, and we have a really wonderful picture of how that's all going to come about in Zechariah, chapters 12, 13, and 14. This puts it all together from the beginning of the final cataclysmic battle at the end of this age, going right on into the millennial reign of Christ and how it will look. We have in verse 2 of chapter 12, the beginning of what we see today. Behold, I am going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes reeling to all the peoples around. It's already become a very much a cup of reeling, but it's going to get worse. And when the siege is against Jerusalem, it will also be against Judah. It will come about in that day, I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will be severely injured, and all of the nations of the earth will be gathered against it. That's Antichrist and all of his kings with him. In that day, declares the Lord, I will strike every horse with bewilderment and his rider with madness. But I will watch over the house of Judah while I strike every horse of the peoples with blindness. Then the clans of Judah will say in their hearts, a strong support for us are the inhabitants of Jerusalem through the Lord of hosts, their God. And in that day I will make the clans of Judah like a fire pot among pieces of wood and a flaming torch among sheaves. So they will consume on the right hand and on the left all the surrounding peoples, while the inhabitants of Jerusalem will again dwell on their own sites in Jerusalem. The Lord will also save the tents of Judah first, in order that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not be magnified above Judah. In that day the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the one who is feeble among them in that day will be like David, and the house of David will be like God, like the angel of the Lord before them. We haven't seen this happen yet. And it will come about in that day that I will set about to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. I will pour out on the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication, so they will look on me whom they have pierced, and they will mourn for him as one mourns for an only son, and they will weep bitterly over him like the bitter weeping over a firstborn. In that day there will be great mourning in Jerusalem, like the mourning of Hadrad-Rimmon in the plain of Megiddo. The land will mourn, every family of the house of David by itself, the wives by themselves. He lists all the families. Going on down into 13, in that day a fountain will be opened for the house of David. a fountain for cleansing he's talking about. For the inhabitants of Jerusalem, for sin and for impurity, it will come about in that day, declares the Lord of hosts, that I will cut off the names of the idols from the land, and they will no longer be remembered. And I will also remove the prophets and the unclean spirit from the land. And it will come about that if anyone still prophesies, then his father and mother who gave birth to him will say to him, you shall not live, for you have spoken falsely in the name of the Lord. And his father and mother who gave birth to him will pierce him through when he prophesies. The prophets will each be ashamed of his vision when he prophesies, and they will not put on a hairy robe in order to deceive. But he will say, I'm not a prophet, I'm a tiller of the ground. For a man sold me as a slave in my youth. And one will say to him, what are these wounds between your arms? Then he will say, those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd and against the man, my associate, declares the Lord of hosts. Strike the shepherd that the sheep may be scattered, and I will turn my hand against the little ones. It will come about in all the land, declares the Lord, that two parts in it will be cut off and perish, but the third will be left in it. This is the great tribulation. Two-thirds of the Jews will be destroyed. But the third part, the remnant, will be left in it, and I will bring the third part through the fire. Refine them as silver is refined. Test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God. Behold, a day is coming for the Lord when the spoil taken from you will be divided among you. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city will be captured, the houses plundered, the women ravished, and half the city exiled. But the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as when he fights on a day of battle. In that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which is in front of Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives will be split in its middle from east to west by a very large valley. This is the earthquake that's going to take place, splitting the mountain. So that half of the mountain will move toward the north and the other half toward the south. You will flee by the valley of my mountains, for the valley of the mountains will reach to Azel. Yes, you will flee, just as you fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Then the Lord my God will come, and all the holy ones with him. That's Christ in his glory, chapter 19 of Revelation. It will come about in that day that there will be no light. The luminaries will dwindle, for it will be a unique day which is known to the Lord, neither day nor night, but it will come about that at evening time there will be light. And it will come about in that day that living waters will flow out of Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and the other half toward the western sea. It will be in summer as well as in winter. We jump from that unique day when the luminaries dwindle to a picture in the millennium of the flowing out of living waters out from Jerusalem. And the Lord, verse 9, will be king over all the earth. In that day, the Lord will be the only one, and his name, the only one. All the land will be changed. You saw that in those pictures I passed around. The land will be changed into a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. But Jerusalem will rise and remain on its site from Benjamin's gate as far as the place of the first gate, the corner gate, and from the Tower of Hananel to the king's wine presses. People will live in it, and there will be no more curse, for Jerusalem will dwell in security. Now this will be the plague with which the Lord will strike all the peoples who have gone to war against Jerusalem. Their flesh will rot while they stand on their feet. Their eyes will rot in their sockets, and their tongue will rot in their mouth. This looks like atomic warfare. It will come about in that day that great panic from the Lord will fall on them. They will seize one another's hand, and the hand of one will be lifted up against the hand of another. Judah will fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the surrounding nations will be gathered, gold and silver and garments in great abundance. So also, like this plague, there will be the plague on the horse, the mule, the camel, the donkey, and all the cattle that will be in those camps. Then it will come that any who are left of all the nations that went up against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to celebrate the Feast of Booths. And it will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain on them. This is an earthly scene. If the family of Egypt does not go up, no rain will fall on them. It will be the plague with which the Lord smites the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. This will be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations who do not go up. In that day there will be inscribed on the bells of the horses, Holy to the Lord. And the cooking pots in the Lord's house will be like the bowls before the altar. Every cooking pot in Jerusalem and in Judah will be holy to the Lord of hosts, and all who sacrifice will come and take of them and boil in them. And there will no longer be a Canaanite, meaning an unbeliever, in the house of the Lord of hosts in that day. I think we can see how the whole cataclysmic end comes, and right up through how holy everything is going to be in Israel, right down to the cooking pots. It's going to be a complete switch. They will be the Lord's people. He will be their God, and everything about the nation will be holy. Now, I want to give you just a list of scriptures, those of you who are listening, that you can mark down to go to and read. You can go to Hosea chapter 2, verses 14 through 23, Hosea 3, verses 4 and 5, Hosea 5, verse 15 through Hosea 6, verse 3, Hosea 11, 8 through 11, Hosea 14, 1 through 9, Ezekiel 36, 21 through 38, Ezekiel 37, 11 through 28, Ezekiel 39, 20 through 29, now Isaiah 11, 6 through 16, Isaiah 27, 2 through 6, Isaiah 30, 18 through 33, Isaiah 32, the whole chapter, but especially verses 15 through 20, Isaiah 35, the entire chapter, Isaiah 31, 4 through 9, Isaiah 49, 13 through 26, Isaiah 59, 20 through 21, the entire chapter of Isaiah 60, Isaiah 61, 4 through 10, Isaiah 62, all of it, Amos 9, 11 through 15, Micah 4, 1 through 5, and 1 through the entire chapter of verse 5, of chapter 5, Zephaniah chapter 3, all of it, Joel chapter 3, 18 through 21. I'm going to go over into Isaiah and read some from chapter 54. Isaiah just spoke over and over and over of this time. But chapter 54 gives it a good summing up, where he says, the mountains may be removed, or verse 9, let me start there, chapter 54, verse 9. For this is like the days of Noah to me, when I swore that the waters of Noah would not flood the earth again. So I have sworn that I will not be angry with you, nor will I rebuke you. For the mountains may be removed and the hills may shake, but my loving kindness will not be removed from you. And my covenant of peace will not be shaken, says the Lord who has compassion on you. O afflicted one, storm-tossed and not comforted, behold, I will set your stones in antimony, and your foundations I will lay in sapphires. Moreover, I will make your battlements of rubies and your gates of crystal, and your entire wall of precious stones, and all your sons will be taught of the Lord, and the well-being of your sons will be great. In righteousness you will be established. You will be far from oppression, for you will not fear, and from terror, for it will not come near you. If anyone fiercely assails you, it will not be from me. Whoever assails you will fall because of you. Behold, I myself have created the smith who blows the fires of coal and brings out a weapon for its work, and I have created the destroyer to ruin. No weapon that is formed against you shall prosper, and every tongue that accuses you in judgment you will condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their vindication is from me, declares the Lord. In the New Testament, We have some things from the book of Hebrews that I think you'd like to sum up, Mark.
Were you going to go ahead and talk about that Hebrews 12?
Why don't you talk about Hebrews 2, 3, and then I'll tell about 12.
Okay, well, this is the kingdom of Christ, and Christ comes to rule on the earth. And you might say, well, it seems to me if Christ was, I mean, this was just this major glorious kingdom, certainly Christ would have spoken much about it. And he did. If you look at Hebrews, the second chapter, let's just start with the second verse. It says, "For if the word spoken through angels proved unalterable, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense." Now that word spoken through angels was that's the word of the Old Testament. "How shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, after it was first spoken through the Lord, it was confirmed to us by those who heard?" So this great salvation that he's talking about is the culmination of salvation. And this culmination is first going to be manifested in the millennial kingdom. But it says it was first spoken through the Lord. So if we turn to, if we want to see where he taught about it, turn to Matthew 13. And these are the parables. And these parables begin to speak about the kingdom of heaven. And it speaks about the kingdom of heaven from the beginnings of it to the end of it. And the study of these parables is just very interesting and somewhat surprising. There are different interpretations, but we can look at chapter 13, and we're just going to zip through this quickly, just so we're not going to study the parables. We're just going to see what Jesus said in verse 19 of chapter 13. "When one hears the word of the kingdom and doesn't understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in the heart. This is the one on whom the seed was sown by the road." So this is the word of the kingdom. Jesus is teaching these parables. And then we go down to verse 24. "He presented another parable, saying to them, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed seed in a field." And then, so that there's, he's telling about this kingdom of heaven. This kingdom of heaven starts when we're born again, and then it goes into this kingdom that is complete and glorious. And let's see, now jump down to verse 31. "He presented another parable, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed." Verse 33, "And he spoke another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in three pecks of meal until it was leavened." And then go down to 44. "The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and from the joy over it goes and sells all that he has to buy the field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking out fine pearls." Verse 47, "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet cast into the sea, gathering fish of every kind." So when you look at these parables and you think about the kingdom of heaven, not only just the church age, but the extension into the millennial kingdom, these parables take on new meaning. If you could turn to Matthew 20 and see just a little bit more of this same thing of Jesus teaching about the kingdom. Verse 1 says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers." So he's teaching what the kingdom of heaven is going to be like, and he's teaching it in parables. And he's teaching it in parables because he does not want the Jews to understand it. He said, you will be able to understand it, but they won't be able to understand it. It was prophesied in Isaiah that this was going to happen, that they wouldn't, that their hearts would be hardened and they wouldn't understand it. Chapter 25, verse 1, continues some of the same Jesus teaching about the kingdom. Then the kingdom of heaven will be compared to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. And then chapter 25, verse 14, for it's talking about the kingdom of heaven, is like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted them his business. This is the parable of the talents. So all of those are Jesus teaching about the kingdom of heaven, and they are just very interesting and very revealing, and we'll get into a couple of those when we continue this teaching on into the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 20, 24 and 25.
Well, the writer of the book of Hebrews speaks of this kingdom at the close of his book, right before the 13th chapter, which is simply the practical application, the closing out of the doctrinal part of the book in Hebrews 12. He says to all of them whom he has admonished throughout this book about watching out how they live and given them five great warnings to be careful how they live so that they will be able to enter this kingdom. He says at verse 25 of the 12th chapter, "See to it that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For if those did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, much less will we escape who turn away from him who warns from heaven. And his voice shook the earth then, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more, I will shake not only the earth, but also heaven." Speaking of this cataclysmic time that we just looked at in Zechariah. This expression, "yet once more," denotes the removing of those things which can be shaken as of created things, so that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, this is the millennial kingdom, the glorious kingdom, it will not be able to be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe.
Carol, a better translation, I think, is, therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us hold fast the grace by which we may offer to God an acceptable sacrifice with reverence and awe. For our God is a consuming fire. Hold fast the grace is an acceptable translation of that same.
Let us show gratitude.
It makes a lot more sense.
Okay. So we just, there are just so many, many, probably twice as many, I think even more than twice as many prophecies of the second coming of the Lord than there are of the first coming. As I was saying earlier when we were off the tape, it's just a certain blindness that's over the church today, unfortunately, that has blinded us to his second coming and all the glories of the kingdom that it will be coming along with his coming. And we just think sometimes that we have more insight than the Jews had, but I think our blindness to the second coming matches their blindness to the first coming. And so we can't be haughty and think that we have something more than they.